and KT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
We are back in studio with Dr. Brian Nixon. Brian is an assistant pastor at Calvary Church. He oversees publishing and education for the church. He is also the author of a new book called Tilt, Finding Christ in Culture. Brian Nixon, welcome.
Great to be with you as normal, Jim. And, you know, as exciting as our discussions are on the radio, I always love when we're talking outside. You know, sometimes it's like, Jim, you should just bring the radio live with you wherever you go, because you're always asking inquisitive questions and you really represent the whole concept of Tilt, you know, well. You're just asking questions and getting insight. So I always enjoy our conversation on and off the air.
Well, and we should tell people a little bit about Tilt. The book is now available at Parchments and on, is it available on Amazon?
Oh, yeah. Some of those
platforms. And it's really an interesting book, I think, because a lot of Christians don't look at the world of art and mm-hmm. culture, and they'll take something like, you look at Andy Warhol, mm-hmm. who isn't known for his spiritual leadership in our country, but he was an amazing artist, mm-hmm. and he did a Last Supper mm-hmm. and a number of different paintings. And you talk about that and what maybe he was appreciating about it. You talk about, movie stars like Robert Redford mm-hmm. and people that
Sam Shepard
and the work that they've done. And you see God and mm-hmm. you see Christ emerging from a lot of that work, even though that may not have been their intention.
Right.
You look at beauty, you look at significance in nature, you look at, you know, today we're going to talk about, is it time for us to get on a bike and pray and ride and keep in shape? All of those kind of fun things. So.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, you point that out. And a lot of times these artists don't realize, what they're doing. In Andy Warhol's case, he did. You know, he was shot, almost died. And, you know, I think at that point in his life, he started to reprioritize. And of course, he was brought up Roman Catholic. His mother still lived with him, you know, his Catholic, you know, mother. So I think he purposely did start to focus on Jesus, overtly in his final paintings were all of Christ in the Last Supper. Interestingly enough, with Andy Warhol, and I point this out in the book, his first known published work is of a manger scene. And his last is of the Last Supper. And so it's interesting to note that Andy Warhol's career is bookmarked by what we would know as biblical themes. But, you know, a lot of authors or artists or poets, they may not necessarily get the full orbness of what they're just out there creating. But then when you turn around and you look at what they're doing, you're going, boy, there's a lot of biblical imagery, whether they know it or not. And, you know, we hear this a lot in literature. A lot of people will go, well, you know, East of Eden, John Steinbeck, obviously it's a biblical title, but it is kind of like a Cain and Abel type story. And some of them are very obvious like that. But then you get to someone like Ernest Hemingway and someone goes, well, Old Man and the Sea. And then you realize that when the old man, is dying at the end, he's falling down in accordance to how Christ fell down. So there's a lot of biblical imagery, either overt or not so overt, in literature and in the arts.
Part of what we're going to talk about today, though, is a balance between how Christians should be affecting the culture mm-hmm. and influencing the
right.
culture, as opposed to the other way around. And I'm not going to say this in any kind of politically correct way, so I apologize to everybody in advance, but I just have to say that I know a lot of people that are people of faith, mm-hmm. and if something isn't labeled Christian, which, by the way, doesn't mean it is.
Right.
If it's not labeled that way, then they want nothing to do with it. And I think people are missing out on
so much. I agree, Jim. Completely agree.
And that comes about, you know, we have a very well-known music station, Star 88, mm-hmm. One of the first contemporary Christian music stations of its kind in the country. Mm-hmm. And of course, there's others that have grown and are much larger, but Star 88 is an amazing music station. And I know there are people that say, hey, if you're not listening to a song with Christian lyrics, then that's bad. Well, I just don't agree with that.
Right.
I mean, there's things about the New Mexico Philharmonic.
Right.
I'd never really been exposed to that, but I had a friend that took me a couple times in the past year. Amazing experience.
Amazing.
I went and saw the Olga Kern piano competition.
Yep.
Wow.
Amazing.
You know, you start listening to Rachmaninoff and
right.
some of these other artists, and you just, you feel it.
That's exactly right. Yeah, I completely, completely agree with you, Jim. First of all, let me jump on your thought about not everything that's deemed Christian necessarily may be Christian. You know, it may be Christian in maybe word choice or so on and so forth. Let me give you a clear-cut example. Back in the 90s, I was in a Christian rock band. And we were five guys who took our faith very, very seriously. I mean, you know, it was all about, you know, getting out there and sharing the gospel and doing good works and such. But we played with other groups that for all intents and purposes, they were signed to the Christian label, and they, you know, they weren't living, you know, what we would know as a moral lifestyle. And when you got talking to some of these guys, it was just like, yeah, I started off as a Christian, but you know, but this is a gig, you know, it pays the bills. And really, but my real goal is to go and join, you know, or do this type of music. And you scratch your head and you go, huh. So a lot of times things that, and I'm not saying that all CCM
right.
people are like that, but a lot of times it's like, oh, you know, it's more of a show, a facade. Whereas there are amazing works, classical music, jazz music, that have a level of excellency, a level of truth to them that make them, in some respects, more Christian than just, you know, planting the name Jesus on a lyric. There's something just beautiful about what they're doing. And I always, Jim, have went back when, and I hit on this a little bit in Tilt. But one of the things I tell people to do when they go, well, what is the things I'm supposed to be looking at as a Christian in the culture? And I go, Paul already gave it to us. Philippians 4. You know, Paul clearly tells us these are the things you should be thinking on. You know, whatever is of good report, whatever is virtuous, whatever is lovely or beautiful. And he goes down this list and he goes, think about these things or meditate. These are the things that you should be. And that doesn't necessarily mean something that's virtuous or beautiful like the New Mexico Philharmonic. It may not be a biblical theme that they're playing, but it's virtuous, it's beautiful, it's lovely, it's of good report. And that's the type of thing that we should be setting our mind to.
And Brian, you also want to challenge Christians in, and again, we'll talk about this because we have quite a bit of time together today, but you want Christians to influence the culture by producing excellent art.
That's exactly right.
You know, I used an example, tragic death of Kobe Bryant.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he's a great basketball player. I enjoyed Kobe. He had, I believe he was a person of faith.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, was he perfect? Nope.
None of us are.
No. Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, we're just saying, look, this is a guy that lived an amazing life, accomplished some great things athletically, believed in Jesus, was faulted just like us.
Mm-hmm.
But I observed something in his funeral that was televised. I saw Beyonce.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't have many days to prepare this. But I remember listening to her sing. And I don't remember the song, but all I can tell you is that I thought, whatever she touches is excellent.
Mm-hmm.
The production was just crazy good. Her voice mm-hmm. was amazing. And I thought about how much influence a person like that has on our world
mm-hmm.
because they're so committed to their craft.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something Christians need to be.
Yeah,
too.
That's exactly right. You know, this is a question that has been asked on multiple levels throughout many years, particularly since the turn of last century. Christians seem to have lost their influence in culture, and it has just decreased over the year. And now the Christian influence is almost next to nothing. And a lot of commentators, Christian commentators, have noted that around that time, Christians stopped leading in the arts and in culture generally, and they just started to follow what everyone else was doing. So rather than being creative and doing something that was so unique and so interesting and so engaging, they just said, oh, they're doing this. Let's just adopt it and change the name. So let me give you a bad example that we've seen. So someone started a gym's years ago, Gold's Gym. And they were so successful for a while. So someone goes, well, it's God's Gym. And they just mimicked what someone else did with their intellectual property. So Christian commentators have always said what Christians need to get back to is truly, is what you said, excel in their area and be innovative, engaging, and interesting so that people want to follow what you're doing as opposed to you just following what they're doing and change the name so it has some Jesus-centered set of lyrics or whatever. You know, it's interesting, Jim, on that note, you would remember this, back in the 80s and 90s, there was a chain of stores called Berean Christian Stores. Mm-hmm. And I remember walking into Berean Stores, and they would put up in their music section, if you like so-and-so, you're really going to like this group. But they were still using the secular group as the lead, you know, because they're saying these are the guys who really do it well. And these are the guys who are copying them, but because they put some Christian lyrics on it, you should do it. And I was going, boy, that just doesn't seem right to me. We should be just saying, I want to get these guys because they're doing what they're doing with excellence in their will. They're not just copying someone. And around the same time, I used to go into Berean's and I would buy U2 albums, early U2 albums. So, I would go there and I would buy October and Unforgettable Fire and early U2 because they were a Christian band and they were sold in Christian and outlets and so on and so forth. But then I remember when they stopped carrying them and I went to the bookstore manager and I said, man, I used to buy my U2 albums here. And he goes, well, in my opinion, he goes, they're no longer a Christian band. I'm all, oh, wow. What? And he goes, well, I saw a picture of one of them smoking. And so I said, oh, okay, so smoking makes you Christian or not Christian. Well, that's a bad influence on kids. And so, you know, there could be an argument made there. So they stopped carrying them. But what to me, what dawned on me is what a loss it was for the church. Because, you know, someone who was innovative and excellent and leading the way and challenging our views and really expanding us, we kind of distanced ourselves from them and then the world, you know, bought on and I'm glad they did because, you know, Bono has been a fairly consistent Christian. I don't always agree with everything he says, but he's been a fairly consistent Christian. And it's one of those situations where I just saw the juxtaposition between what the Christian industry, if you will, its business model, and then a broader Christian artistic model.
Well, the truth is that anything that's produced, a human being needs to be able to look at it with a filter that God gives us, right, through the knowledge that we have of His Word and our relationship, mm-hmm, with Him. And then if it's something that's going to be detrimental to us, get away from it.
Right.
But there's so much beauty and so many things that are amazing. So I have very limited, I have no music ability. I'm totally rhythmically challenged. Keeping time is an amazing thing. I remember when my mom was trying to give me piano lessons and she'd start the metronome. I could not tap the top, yeah, of the piano to the rhythm. That's how bad it is. But I've always appreciated music. And recently, you know, 6-8 months ago before COVID, I saw Casting Crowns. Of course, mm-hmm, their lead singer and writer is Mark Hall. He's a, mm-hmm, pastor out in Georgia. And the album that they were promoting and they were singing is an album called Only Jesus.
Right.
And the whole gist of the song is that he has a lot of secular friends, mm-hmm, because he's an amazing musician, an amazing songwriter, that have said, that were saying to him, look, being a Christian artist, you're not going to be able to leave a legacy. People aren't going to remember you. So maybe you ought to do some of this other kind of music. And the song Only Jesus is all about a guy that says, I don't need to leave a legacy. Mm-hmm. I need to just point people to Jesus. And that's what he does.
Mm-hmm.
And he does it in an amazing way.
Right, right.
And he's, you know, compadres with all kinds of amazing Christian artists like the Michael W. Smiths. And, you know, we have one that lives here in Albuquerque, Fernando Ortega. One of the most amazing, yep, pianists and
probably my favorite Christian CCM performer, Fernando Ortega.
And this is a guy that's not limited by his faith musically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he explores all kinds of different things. So finding tilt, finding Christ in culture. I want to ask you a question. What is the most surprising question that you're asked after having released the book?
Well, some feedback I've heard thus far have been they didn't realize how broad the scope was. You know, a lot of people thought, well, I didn't know what to expect, but man, you cover a lot of area. You cover from the arts to music to, you know, there's a little bit of apologetics in there. There's a little bit of science, you know, mathematics. You cover a lot of area and jeepers. And I didn't expect that. So I go, yeah, you know, but the culture's broader than just art and music. You know, it does involve the sciences and other things. And then some other feedback I get is how engaging. They said, you know, you weren't too scared to deal with things that maybe are more theories than they are, you know, factual things. And so, but I go, you're right. You like my little discussion towards the end in the ideas section about God's sovereignty versus man's free will. And I use a formula put out by Kurt Gödel, who's one of my favorite scientists. He was a friend of Albert Einstein. And I use his P equals MP as a framework to talk about a lot of different components about free will versus sovereignty. And someone goes, well, I don't even know if that's true. And I go, I don't either. But you know, the point is that it's the quest of understanding, of trying to seek God and his truth and his beauty and his goodness is part of the fun. So, you know, there's some fun. Other feedback I heard is someone was really surprised at the poems. You know, they, you know, first of all, they go, I didn't know, you know, you write poetry. I go, I've written poetry for many years. I've been published poet for, you know, 20 years. And so there was little, you know, different things. And then there's a lot of people saying, man, there is so much information in here. I wish it was broken down into little bits. I mean, it literally, they go, not only is my head tilting, but my head's hurting, because you just have so much information in this book. And so I think all of that's legitimate. You know, there was a couple of nice, one Amazon review, that someone encouraged, you know, that said, this should be a podcast, you know, that type of thing. But it's been fairly positive.
But Brian, it's a fun book. This is about experiencing where we live.
Right.
And New Mexico is one of the, as we've said before, one of the most flavorful places anywhere.
That's
right. The art, the people, the food.
Yeah. You mentioned that, Jim, and you are so correct. New Mexico is probably one of the hidden stars of the book. A lot of the places I go, it's just because I live here, a lot of the articles that I wrote dealt with New Mexico themes. So there's Billy the Kid. There's Buddy Holly. There's Cormac McCarthy, who's, you know, a Santa Fe resident. There's Robert Redford, who's a Santa Fe resident. All these different people. Sam Shepard, who, before he passed away, lived part-time in Santa Fe, at least at that time. So I experienced all of those things here in New Mexico. So I've told people, I said, you know, they go, wow, this is fascinating. You know, how did you get to all this stuff? I go, really? It's right here in front of my nose. I just took the time to go. And that's, you know, as we've talked about in times past, you know, T of tilt is take the time. I investigate, you know, and so I did. I took the time and I went to investigate a cultural event. And that's how I was able to draft this.
Great book. Want to encourage people to pick it up. It's available on the campus of Calvary Church at Parchment's Bookstore. It's also available on Amazon. It's called Tilt, Finding Christ in Culture. And when we come back, we're going to take a quick break and let our sponsors say hello to everybody. We hope you will consider supporting them as they support the ministry here at KNKT. We'll be back with Brian Nixon right after these messages.
How does KNKT mean business? KNKT is in the business of sharing the gospel. KNKT is also supported by local businesses who we, in turn, encourage you to support with your patronage. Here's Steve Ryman visiting one such business.
We recently had a chance to catch up with Buck Buckner, the owner of Rain Tunnel Car Spa. Here's what he had to say about doing business locally.
Hey, Budgay. Car Spa and other local businesses are joining forces to launch a campaign called Local First. It's a call to action to spend our hard-earned money with locally owned businesses. Why local? For every dollar spent at local businesses, the economic impact on our local economy is 3 to 4 times that of the same dollar spent at a non-local entity. With them, profits beyond minor repairs are exported. Local businesses reinvest in the community again and again. Local businesses are completely dependent on community support and thus have a much deeper tie to the neighborhood. Local businesses are as competitive as non-locals. They hire local, promote local, and operate with far less employee turnover. National tenants are not a critical piece of our local economy and arrive only years after local business success. Where are those nationals? Sports Authority, Marcello's, Borders, Raley's, Copeland's, Zia's. Poof. Gone. Legislators, along with American Express, suggest we take one day to buy local. Nice thought. Don't they know our local businesses operate 365 days per year? So think, act, and do local first. Shop local, dine local, wash local, bank local, construct local, search engine local, follow local media. And finally, to increase the coffers for an even greater Albuquerque, keep it local.
To hear your business featured on KNKT, email advertise@knkt.com.
Tired of being quarantined? Have the pandemic blues got you down? Having a food choice crisis? Let's talk about a solution. In queso emergency, head straight for Casa Taco, winner of Albuquerque the Magazine Best of the City 3 years running. Come try the signature brisket and green chili tacos, carne asada tacos, and the amazing puffy tacos, plus much more. Convenient online ordering at casa-taco.com. Two locations in Albuquerque and one in Elephant Butte. Casa Taco.
On KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Starry, starry night. Paint your palette blue and gray. Look out on a summer day.
It's great. Good for Steve. He's doing nice tie-ins to our theme here.
Steve is having so much fun with this music.
Starry, starry night. Obviously, for those who don't know, the Vincent Van Gogh tie-in.
There you go. Dr. Brian Nixon is in studio with us this afternoon. Brian's an assistant pastor at Calvary Church, and he spends most of his time, though, publishing and reading stuff written by one Skip Heitzig.
That's right. Yeah. As my official responsibilities at schools, I'm director of publishing and director of education. So I oversee the publishing department, and we're constantly working on new Skip, Pastor Skip books. We're really excited. We have the two next books. I'm not going to spoil it for everyone, but we know got our marching orders as to where we're going. And then when I'm not doing that, I'm overseeing our early childhood education as well as teaching at the college, which, by the way, I'll be teaching this semester starting August 18th. Tuesday evenings, I'll be teaching church history. So if Calvary College begins, not this week, but the following week, and we're doing live classes and online classes.
And people can register through the 10th, I understand.
That's right.
So you don't have too much time left. Again, the real thing with Calvary College is that if you are seeking a degree, you want to take these courses at Calvary College because you can take them at a fraction of what it costs to go to, say, Veritas University.
Right.
And then those credits will transfer, right?
Right. That's exactly right. We're in partnership with two universities, Calvary Chapel University and Veritas University. And we have a really close-knit partnership with Calvary College, Calvary Chapel University, in that they will accept our credit. So if you come and you go through the classes, so we like to put it like Calvary College, the college here on our campus, would be like a junior college. And then you could eventually transfer that material to an accredited university, be it Calvary Chapel University or Veritas, for some
units. And Brian, you've really changed the format to accommodate people that want to take classes by doing everything in the evening now, right?
Yeah, yeah. You know, Nelson, who's really been in the driver's seat, I've been in the passenger seat for that. But, you know, that was one of the things we heard over and over. People would say, I would love to take some college classes, particularly on Bible-centric topics. I just can't leave, you know, my work and go to school from 9 in the morning to 12. Are you ever going to offer them in the evening? Well, this year, Calvary College, new name, new format, new structure. It's all. It's all either in the evening or online. So those people who can't even make evening classes, they could sign up online and do the classes. So it really is an exciting time for education. COVID has caused everyone to go online for their education.
Yes. But I want to get back to Tilt, Finding Christ in Culture. And you make a statement, I'm going to paraphrase it in the book. You say, it's time for Christians to get back on the bike to think, pray, exercise. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, well, in my things section, so again, for our listeners who may not be aware of the book, I break the book down to people, place, things, and ideas. People we already addressed, you know, like Sam Shepard and Robert Redford and Andy Warhol. Places like Las Vegas, New Mexico. But things, I talk about typewriters and bicycles and a lot of different things, birds. And this is from the little section on bicycles. And it was a section on me discovering the joy of riding bikes. And then what I did is I went back in history and found that a lot of theologians also rode bikes, from Albert Schweitzer to Jacques Zizou to, you know, the list goes on. Barth, all these people rode bicycles. And when I was beginning to appreciate and experience the joys of biking, it just dawned on me, if there's one thing bicycles really do well, it affords you time with the Lord, or time to think, or time to pray, or whatever you want to do, because, you know, it takes you longer to get somewhere. But it also immerses you in creation. You know, on a bike, you're able to see things and do things you can't do in a car. You know, hey, I want to turn down this road. Well, I couldn't do that if I was in a car, but I could do that on a bike. Or I know multiple times as I was riding to work on my bike, I would see coyotes, obviously roadrunners. I would see nature, because I rode down the Bosque Trail, where, you know, you're right there along the Rio Grande and you've got all these beautiful trees around you. But I would be able to participate in nature and be more of a participant in, you know, the ebb and flow of things on a bike. So it's just, it really was a section on the joys of bike, but how theologians and other people, including C.S. Lewis, have used the bicycle in their writings as well.
Again, not a politically correct statement, going off script a little bit, but you just mentioned you were participating with nature.
Uh-huh.
So I'm imagining that you're not wearing headsets with music blaring at whatever decibel so you can't hear what's going
right
on in nature.
Yeah, sometimes if I'm, let's say, riding to exercise and I'm just trying, I'll put on music just to break a sweat. Most of the time, Jim, though, I am just strolling. I'm part of what's called the slow bike movement. And literally, I'm not really part of the club. There really is a club called the slow bike movement, primarily in Europe, where bicycling in Europe is major. Whole cities are now transitioning almost completely to bicycles. And they're doing it for a variety of reasons. But the slow bicycle movement, they propose that we should just be riding the bike at a leisurely pace to enjoy what is around us. And I love the fact of being part of God's creation. You know, am I a tree hugger? No, but I do value nature. I do value that, you know, here's the way I've put it to people, and I may have said it in the book as well. If creation's good enough for God, then it's good enough for me.
Yes.
You know, if he called it good and he said, I'm putting my stamp or my stamp of approval or what I have deemed good, then that's good enough for me. If he's called me to be a steward of it, I need to be a steward of creation. So I think when you're riding your bike, you're much more of a participant in things around you versus, you know, in your sheltered car. And again, I drive my car daily to work. I'm not saying you have to be a bicycle only person, but every now and then get out of your car, get on your bike and experience something in a fresh new way. It's an enjoyable process.
And we really do, again, getting back to New Mexico, have some nice places you can ride and not worry about cars and all those kinds of things.
Honestly, Jim, our Bosque Trail, I know in some tourism things they promote it out there, but it should be on all our tourism things, you know, of getting on that trail and riding basically from Paseo. You could go down to Isleta if you want. I've never went that far, but I usually go to the Hispanic Cultural Center. That is some of the most enjoyable, you know, riding. You're out there in nature. You're seeing other bike riders. You could stop at Bike and Coffee, you know, that's that little farm right there. It's just beautiful. And you're experiencing things at a different pace. And so I think, you know, back to the quote, you know, bike does allow you to think better. You could think through things, allows you time to pray for people. And of course you're getting your exercise in. It is really just a beautiful combination. So, and it goes back to something you said at the beginning of the program, Jim. It's just enjoying the life the Lord has given you.
Let's talk now about maybe a negative effect that culture might have on a person's mm-hmm. faith. What are you concerned about when it comes to culture?
Well, obviously when culture has a huge sway, and culture has a heavy impact on people's lives. And I think as Christians, we always have to approach culture biblically and informed. We don't need to, you know, swallow, you know, the full pill a lot of times. We could be able to find Christian themes and find beauty and excellence in many fields, but you don't always have to swallow everything culture is giving you. So because culture deals a lot of times with your emotions, you know, music and art and movies and so on and so forth, it could sway us. So we always have to be careful and put it, what I'd call the glasses or biblical lens. We have to find out, you know, what is it ultimately saying? Is it good what it's saying? What are its ramifications? And even if I disagree with it or I don't think it's Christian, why, you know, then answer the reasons why I don't think it's Christian. Doing so in a truthful and loving way. So culture, because it involves emotions, it really is something Christians need to tread carefully. Let me give you an example, Jim. In the early church, for let's say the first 300 years of the church's life, Christians had a very varied understanding of the arts. There were some people like Tertullian who was opposed to the arts. He wanted nothing, you know, even said, what is, you know, Athens have to do with Jerusalem? We shouldn't be engaged with the arts. And then you have someone like in the middle, like Augustine, who valued the arts, but he said, hey, let's approach them carefully. And then you'd have someone like Basil of Caesarea. He would really just view the arts and we need to be engaged with the arts. And so those three people kind of represent, I think, even what we find today, those who are opposed to anything in the culture and those who adopt it and try to use it and so on and so forth. I think, you know, maybe Augustine's way is best, you know, of like saying, hey, we could value this, but let's just be careful. Let's make sure we're living, putting our Christian walk before we do entertainment. Another interesting point, in the early church, Jim, you would never believe what they viewed as their number one thing they saw as a problem, and then what they viewed as probably the highest level of beauty. They saw as the biggest problem, not music, though they knew music could sway you and so on and so forth. They saw the biggest problem for Christians was what we'd call a theater, or what we could put movies. Mm. So they thought that that was the biggest problem because it drew you in so much. It was the reenactment. It brought you in, you know, body, mind, and soul. So a lot of early Christians were very much against what in today's day we would say a play or a movie. Whereas they thought the highest good, what Christians should aspire to was poetry. Mm. And why they thought poetry is because they said, well, God wrote one third of the book of the Bible in poetry. And poetry is really the way to refine and to express adoration and truth and all these things. So they were leery of play they were leery of theater, but they were very high on poetry. And so it shows you the balance that even in the early church, Christians were still struggling with various modes of culture. And there were, as I've already pointed out, from Tertullian to Augustine, to Basil of Caesarea, there was a lot of opinions on it.
I have in my mind a couple movies that Christians have produced in the last 5 or 6 years. Well, actually, I say the last 10 or 12 years. Mm-hmm. And when they started out, like I remember the Left Behind series. Mm-hmm. Interesting. They tried to follow a biblical script. Didn't think the acting was right. That great. But boy, I'll tell you what, you start looking at some of the stuff that they did about Mercy Me and mm-hmm. fabulous musician that wrote a song and they did a movie about it. They got really quality actors.
Yeah.
It was really, I think, a great film.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, for me, Jim, the mark of a great film, be it overtly Christian or not Christian, is its attuneness to excellence. And, you know, as you know, you have one or two bad acting and it could ruin the whole movie. You're just going, oh boy, you know, that wasn't, or a very poor script. And so I think what, be it Christian or non-Christian, we should strive for excellence in whatever we do. You know, you'd mentioned Beyonce. Why do we like Beyonce? Obviously, she's a great self-promoter. She's a big pop star. But you already point out, she strived for excellence. And I think if Christians want to lead, once again, in endeavors, we need to strive for excellence. We need to say, we want the best acting, or find the people who are going to bring the best to this role. We want the best script writers. We want the best visual artists as we could possibly get. And then people will start taking notice. People will start going, huh, they're producing something that's truly amazing. And it's been brought out many, many times. For the first, particularly from the late, early Middle Ages to the Renaissance, the church were their world leaders because they were striving for excellence in everything they did. And they ended up leading. So excellence produces results.
I'm going to give you an example of something that I think Christians have really done a great job with, at least two that I know of. I really enjoy comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And 95% of the comedy out there is very profane. And I don't enjoy that. But then you have people like Jeff Allen, Jeff Foxworthy, two Christian guys that are so funny because all they do is tell stories that are real life. There's a lady named Jeannie Robinson. I don't know if Jeannie's still alive, but she was more of a storyteller and just telling non-profane things. And I think that that's an example of a couple of people that are doing something in a genre that takes brilliance.
Yeah, totally.
Where you're not depending upon cuss words and things to make people laugh.
No, I agree with you. And they're great examples of someone who's excelling in their field because they're raising it to a level of excellence. And people respond to excellence. When something is done well, people go, oh, I appreciate that, that's done well. Something else that I think the church historically has done, not all churches, but a good portion, is what we call oration. Or AKA the sermon. You get a great speaker, a great communicator. Let's take Pastor Skip as an example. He's a great speaker. And so the church excels in particular segments, not all pastors, some, you know, are great sleepers, but, you know, the church could excel in those areas. And so the church does excel in areas, but sadly it's given over the culture to the broadly secular worldview.
Dr. Brian Nixon in studio with us. We'll be back with our final segment with Brian. Stay with us.
I'm Rob Snead, General Manager at Power Forward. If you're tired of the other guys, old school, hokey games, and cheesy sales tactics, then come experience something new school at Power Forward. Our approach is simple. We make it all about you. Every new vehicle comes with the confidence of a 100,000-mile warranty, complimentary maintenance, and roadside assistance. And we also guarantee that we'll beat any new Ford deal in New Mexico or put $1,000 cash in your pocket. Find your ride at mypowerford.com.
Call 888-243-8183 for details.
Gonstead Physical Medicine specializes in the diagnosis and treatment of spinal ligament injury, pain in your back, neck, shoulders, arms, and legs, as well as numbness in your extremities. Dizziness and bladder or bowel issues can all be symptoms. 90% of doctors treating spinal ligament injuries don't know how to determine the severity and location of this condition. At Gonstead Physical Medicine, all of the providers are trained to do this. Schedule a consultation today at gonstead-nm.com or 505-884-8584.
Duke City Ready Mix, your local premier concrete and gravel producer, recently received national recognition by winning the Excellence in Concrete Quality Award from the National Ready Mix Association. We are dedicated to earning your trust by our consistent quality, service, and by being a good neighbor, serving the entire valley. Visit us at qualitymattershere.com or call 877-5777. Duke City Ready Mix. Quality, service, community.
Hi, this is Adam Holtz, and you're listening to Plugged In.
Sorry about you and Noah.
We didn't break up, though.
With different zip codes. Breakups are basically automatic.
In the Netflix sequel, The Kissing Booth 2, we're reunited with teen lovers Elle and Noah. This time, Noah's at Harvard, while Elle's finishing high school. She misses Noah, and she fears he'll be seduced by more experienced women at college. But Elle's got another problem, a newcomer named Marco who's testing her fidelity too. Cue the teen drama. The Kissing Booth 2 is rated TV-14, but these teens act more like they're 28. Physical intimacy is a given. Same-gender relationships, profanity, and underage drinking show up too. So we're giving The Kissing Booth 2 a 1 out of 5 for family friendliness. Read the full review at PluggedIn.com/radio. I'm Adam Holtz for Focus on the Family's Plugged In Movie Review.
You're listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Mona Lisa, Mona Lisa.
Nat King Cole.
Steve Ryman, our producer, having fun with music. And I love it because he loves music. He's bringing out all kinds of things to help illustrate what we're talking about today. Dr. Brian Nixon, author of the book called Tilt, Finding Christ in Culture. Brian, maybe a stupid question, but who's in charge of the culture?
So important, Jim. And as a matter of fact, I include this discussion in my church history class. And think about it like a triangle. So you have a basic triangle, and if you draw certain lines, so you would get, like, let's say 5 spaces on this triangle. The very top are what we would call the intellectual, or they're the ideas people. They're the people who are the leaders in culture, and it could be business culture, but they're the ones who are creating new thoughts, new concepts, new ideas, new brands, you name it. They're the, what we'd call the, you've heard it say, the cultural elite. But that's true. There's people up there who are leading. And that usually is involved large times with the intellectual groups of colleges and so on and so forth. So they're the ones who are setting the stage, if you will. Then the next step down from that top of the triangle would be your artists, and your poets and your musicians, who are basically incorporating those ideas and disseminating them through you know, various media outlets, which would lead to that next step, which is the media. The media then catches hold of. Now, they didn't create the culture. They basically said, that's where it's at, and I'm going to now popularize it. So the media captures it, and then they mass produce it.
Okay, but there's a thing, a concept that I learned in college. It was called cybernetic news. And what it basically meant, instead of reporting news objectively, they were telling people, they were talking about things that the people wanted to hear about.
Sure, biases.
Yeah.
And by the way, I'm not saying that this triangle represents a biblical worldview. This is just how it flows in culture. So once media gets it, and they, most of the time bias, or a lot of the times, then it goes to the masses, the status quo, the broad people. We usually get it through movies. We get it through entertainment. We get it through TV. And then we become numb to it, or it becomes part of our life. And then the very last step of that triangle would be religious institutions. They're usually the least quick to adapt. Now, that's changing some. Sometimes the church now is adapting much quicker and keeping up with things. But this isn't just with culture, but this is with ideas in general. You could take even things that aren't, very appealing, particularly from a Christian vantage point. Let's say abortion. You know, it was brought up by, you know, the intellectual elite. Hey, this needs to be there. Then people started to promote it. You would say you're culturally artists, poets, so on and so forth. Then the media got hold of it, started to propagate it. And by the way, usually the intellectual elite and the artists, you could even put government in there. But government usually sometimes could even be towards the bottom as well. They could be late adapters. But usually after it's disseminated through the media, then people start to believe it. And you could view this triangle from various lenses. By the time it reaches the media and they start doing it, then we almost become numb to it. It becomes like, well, of course we do that because I've seen that on TV. But it didn't start with the media. It started with the intellectual group. So think of this, Jim. When Nazi Germany wanted to rid itself, or Mussolini, or, you know, Franco's, you know, Italy, wherever, who did they go after first? They went after the intellectuals, the artists, and the poets. You get rid of those people, then you could control the media. So what they tried to do is they tried to get rid of the cultural elite, be it the intellectuals, the philosophers, the artists, poets, musicians, because they're the ones setting the tone for everyone else. And so they started to kill and imprison and, you know, push out these type of people. That's why a lot of them in World War II came here, the scientists and so on and so forth, the musicians, because Nazi Germany wanted to control it. And these guys were saying, no, we need to set the thing, because what dictatorships do, they want to control the full triangle, whereas in a free society, you let it flow.
So I want to put together a little analogy here. I don't know if I can pull it off, but if you're a TV network and you have a news channel, you have sponsors, and let's say it's a big giant soft drink company. And if somebody on your program, even though you may feel convicted to say, this is the truth, you're not going to tell the truth because the sponsor might pull their sponsorship and the station might lose money.
Sure.
Or the network. But is social media and the internet kind of taking over where people that were dissenters, people that wanted to express things that were contrary to the media are starting to speak now?
Yeah. And we're living in an interesting time where social media would definitely fall under that third tier of media. You still have to understand the very top are the intellectual. Excuse me, Jim. I got tickle in my throat. They're the movers and shakers still. But the social media is one way that it's propagating so quickly. So you could get false information out very quick.
Well, it's even more important for us to be able to evaluate messages and mediums and things that are coming at us, because we're inundated with,
that's right,
with it.
It goes back to what you said. What is our lens? And our lens should be a biblical worldview. And I even break it down to that Philippians 4:8. What are things praiseworthy? What are things are lovely? What are things are true? These are the things we need to be thinking on. So we should use Philippians 4:8. As our matrix, as the lenses upon which we're viewing culture, because that's how we're going to value. Truth does matter. Even though our culture is saying that it doesn't, truth does matter. Facts do matter. These are the type of things that do matter, and we have to approach it from a Christian standpoint still. And just because the intellectual elite at the top of the triangle are setting the stage for things doesn't necessarily mean we Christians have to buy into it. What we have to do is counteract it with the truth of who God is.
Philippians 4:8 says, finally, brethren, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is of good repute, if there is any excellence and if anything worthy of praise, dwell on these things.
You have it. And that right there, you know, would even answer, you know, your question, how can Christians influence culture? Take Paul up on his words and go, I'm going to create something that's excellent. I'm going to create something that's true to its form, to its nature. I'm going to create something that's lovely, that, you know, beautiful, and you're going to have an amazing product.
Dr. Brian Nixon, thank you for joining us today on ABQ Connect. I want to remind everybody again that ABQ Connect is presented by Bosky Heating and Cooling. Locally grown, locally owned. For service, call 444-7200. Enjoy your weekend.
Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KNKT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KNKT. If you missed any or part of today's show, get the free podcast at abqconnect.online.